Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. A report released recently by the children's advocacy group NC Child paints a sobering picture of the way North Carolina is responding to a mental health crisis that's been afflicting the state's children. The new Kids Count data book finds that while the state and nation have made some headway in reducing child poverty, there have been some big and disturbing jumps in the number of kids experiencing anxiety and depression and even attempting suicide in recent years. And earlier this week, I sat down with NC Child's health program director, Kaylin Safransky, to learn more about the crisis and some steps state lawmakers should be taking to address it.
Well, Kaylin Safransky, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Gosh, there's myriad challenges that face our children these days when it comes to their health. But one of the issues that I know NC Child and the national organization y'all are affiliated with, Kids Count, has really been making a point of emphasis of late is the issue of mental health, and especially in the really not even aftermath, the continuing impact of the pandemic. This remains an enormous challenge for, of course, adults, but a lot of kids too. And that may not be something that a lot of people are focused on, but talk to us about sort of the extent of the problem and how widespread it is.
Absolutely. So you're spot on in that children in North Carolina are experiencing a mental health crisis. They're struggling with anxiety or depression at unprecedented levels. And we really need to expand mental health services to children and young people when and where they need it, including our schools. And so what you had kind of alluded to with the Kids Count data book and their recent release is the data book has reported that children across the country were more likely to encounter anxiety or depression in this first year of the COVID-19 crisis than in previous years. And they found that more than 1 in 10 children, 3 to 17, were diagnosed with depression or anxiety in 2020 alone, which is a huge increase over the past years that really reflects the stresses of the pandemic. In North Carolina, we also saw, of course, that racial and ethnic disparities contribute disproportionately troubling mental health conditions among our children of color. So we found in our state that 1 in 10 high schoolers attempted suicide in the year previous to the pandemic, which is unfortunately our most recent available data. And for students of color, those rates were 50% higher.
Good grief. This is a crisis, clearly.
It truly is. Furthermore, for many of our LGBTQ plus young people, they're encountering even more challenges as they seek mental health support. And they were found to be twice as many gay and lesbian or bisexual students attempted suicide as compared to their whole high school population counterparts.
Wow.
So we are truly in a crisis, and our children deserve a chance to thrive regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or gender expression. And this mental health crisis, while it's daunting, we have tools to rise to the moment for our kids.
I want to talk about some of those, but I think maybe just for our listeners out there, I wonder if you have any thoughts of when a parent maybe should start to worry about this rather than just assuming that their kid is moody or being a teenager. Are there any particular things that maybe people should be on the lookout for? Or I don't know. It just seems as if this is something, if it's so widespread, I can imagine there are a lot of people out there listening who would think, my God, maybe I've been missing the signs.
Absolutely. And such a great question. I think, you know, if there are any concerns that any parent or caregiver is having, you can talk to your pediatrician first and foremost. They are the first in your child's health, including their mental health. And not only talking to them, but not skipping out on things like their regular well checkup visits, making sure they're going at kind of the scheduled periodicity schedule that they should be. And if you have any additional concerns, you can make an additional appointment with your pediatrician. Talk through what you're seeing in your child's behavior. Talk about your concerns, what's happening in the family context that's raising concerns. If they're, you know, feeling anxious about starting school, that's a great time to reach out and talk and get a little bit more support as well as some information and potentially even referrals to additional services. All of that can come through your pediatrician. The other thing that I would want to note is if you or anyone you love or are worried about is thinking about suicide or experiencing a mental health crisis, reaching out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, that 988 number that was recently released, is a really good other alternative for in the moment crisis support. They have trained clinicians. It is confidential and it is 24/7 and it is free. And the clinicians are the folks who are answering the phone and are able to meet any individual in crisis, as well as family members who need additional emotional support because of a crisis or because of alternative concerns. So that's another really important resource.
So that's literally 988 on your phone. Dial those three numbers.
Exactly.
We've talked about some of these things that we can do as individuals. What are some of the things perhaps that we could as a state be doing to address this crisis that's afflicting the mental health of our children? I take it there must be some programs that could be enhanced, some investments that could be made, some improvements we can make to the kinds of services we have available.
Absolutely. We have quite a few kind of thoughts around this. So one way to support our children's mental health is to expand Medicaid. We know that when parents are insured, kids are more likely to get insured and get the care that they need. It's actually called the woodwork effect. So as parents are coming to get care for themselves, they're also being connected to care for the rest of their family, and they're more likely to utilize that care and move forward with that care. Parents' insurance coverage also contributes strongly to family financial stability, which is another huge protective factor that promotes positive mental health and wellness for the whole family unit. When you're less stressed about one thing, it makes it easier for you to have a little bit more resilience, a little bit more support across all of the domains. But the other thing that policymakers should do is invest in evidence-based mental health screening and treatment. And school is one of the most important places where we can support kids' mental health. That means putting more funding into school nurses and social workers and other trained adults who know how to help kids in crisis and know how to help kids before they get to crisis. And when we can put those where kids are, like schools, we're much more able to meet those needs. So what legislators can really do is allocate the resources necessary to increase the presence of social workers, school nurses, psychologists, and other trained mental health professionals on staff. Our state should really be striving to meet the 250-to-1 ratio of students and counselors that's been recommended by the American School Counselor Association. We had some really great news that the state legislature had passed suicide prevention training and protocols in schools in 2001. But we really need them to meet that historic kind of passage of legislation with the staffing that allows us to actually implement those protocols and meet kids' needs.
The numbers in a lot of our schools, I mean, it's really not even close to the recommended ratio. We've got schools where several schools are sharing a school nurse or a counselor. It's pretty sporadic throughout the state at best.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's why North Carolina really needs to make these long-term durable investments in our kids' mental health. And that comes with helping to solve this provider shortage. We know that every state in the country right now is experiencing a provider shortage, especially for specialties like mental health, especially for pediatric mental health. You know, we just truly don't have enough providers right now. So the state has to take steps to invest in getting more people to come provide these services in our schools and stick around so that we're not getting kind of peaks and valleys of when kids can get access to care.
We're talking to Kaylin Safransky, who's the health program director for the children's advocacy group, NC Child. I'm talking a lot about mental health, but it's not the only issue that confronts our children today and confronts their health. One small bright spot in some of the reports we've seen recently is that we're making some incremental progress thanks to some investments, particularly perhaps from the federal government, in reducing child poverty. I take it that might be one small hopeful sign that we've seen of late in recent months and years.
Absolutely. So the policies designed to bolster family economic security in 2020 that came by way of the COVID-19 pandemic have worked. So despite widespread loss of jobs and incomes for so many families in North Carolina, policies like the expanded child tax credit resulted in the decline of children living in poverty in our state in 2020, which signals that these policies work. And the more that we can do to get them to be extended and to stick around and maybe be re-upped as they are slowly coming to a close, I think that can help close that gap in family economic security that just so many of our families need.
It's not shocking, perhaps, that literally putting more money in the pockets of parents tends to benefit the kids over time. Another big concern, of course, though, remains, particularly in recent years, is firearms. The statistics in terms of how many kids we're losing to firearms are terrifying. And it seems like we still have a long way to go here in North Carolina. We're not seeing much of a response from the General Assembly when it comes to attacking this issue.
You know, that is a space where we have been so focused on Medicaid transformation and some of the other big systems overhauls that NC Child has not been able to really focus on because there are so many other things going on in our healthcare system. So I don't have a ton that I can say about that, unfortunately. Okay.
Let's, I guess, maybe sort of sum up them as we come to the end of our time with Kaylin Safransky of NC Child. The pandemic winding down, we hope. But we still know that we lost a lot of young people to the pandemic. We know that it has had a terrible effect on their mental health. We know that there are still big access to healthcare challenges in our state. Top priorities for the General Assembly as we go forward is Medicaid expansion, investment in school nurses. Anything else that you really want to lift up as we contemplate going forward?
You know, I think for so many folks who have been working for Medicaid expansion for the last 10 plus years, that has to remain the priority. That will help close the coverage gap for almost 600,000 individuals. And as I mentioned with that woodwork effect, we know that's going to translate immediately to families getting care, receiving care in an ongoing way. And that's really what allows us to shift our healthcare model ultimately from constantly treating, diagnosing, to preventative care. Preventative care is the name of the game, especially for children. We know if we can catch them early, if we can give them the supports they need early on, we're going to reduce chronic conditions in the long run. And that means they're going to be able to do things like attend in school, graduate, be a part of the job market, go to college if that's what they choose, and really help support our economy in the long run and be on, you know, the right path to living a life that's healthy and with dignity and without having to draw a lot of additional supports because they have chronic health conditions that just weren't caught early on. And we know that's the same thing for parents and caregivers. When they have the health care that they need, they're able to attend to their families, to continue to go to work, to be supporting members of our communities. And so we really want to see everyone get access to healthcare that needs it and to be able to utilize it, not only to treat the things that are going wrong now, but to prevent things from going wrong in the future.
Kaylin Safransky is the Health Program Director for the Children's Advocacy Group, NC Child. Kaylin, if folks want to learn more about NC Child, maybe make a contribution, volunteer, how would they best go about doing that?
Absolutely. You can always find more information at ncchild.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook at ncchild.
Kaylin Safransky, thanks so much for your good work. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk again later this year and hopefully have some additional good news to report.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate all the good work and support you're doing.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries on Apple Podcasts. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.